This is Sean Fabingham, volunteer reader for Sun Sounds of Arizona, reading an article from Arizona Highway's December 1987 issue, and it is entitled Memories of an Arizona Ranch Christmas by Joan Baeza. Christmas morning on this northern Arizona ranch dawns quiet and cold. A thin pad of snow covers the plains, and frost stuccos the buildings and steel storage tank. The world is white and clean. The air hangs still between late fall storms and early spring gales. The wind has quieted down like a fresh horse after a good workout. The old windmill with the missing blades greets first light with a toothless grin, its rotor tied off. No need to pump water now. The tanks are full. A pair of wild mallards is wintering with the ranch ducks on the cattle pond. Their paddlings keep a circle of water open. The saddle horses nicker softly as they come in for a drink of water and a flake of hay. Frost clings to their shaggy bodies and steam puffs from their nostrils. This morning begins like any other, with chores. Fire is built in the wood cook stove, the pitchy breath of pinyon warming the kitchen to life. Cold nips at you like a playful pup as you grab work gloves and step out into the holy day. At first you think, Christmas is like every other day on a ranch. Then you think, it's the other way around. Every day is like Christmas on a ranch, full of timeless wonder and new life. You break the layer of ice formed during the night and clear the drinking trough so horses can water. Above the sharp crack of an axe comes a warbling of coyotes. A mother and two pups with high-pitched voices sound like a whole legion. You start the cold engine of the four-wheel drive pickup and go inside for a cup of coffee while it warms up. The ice must be broken on all the dirt tanks so cattle can drink. Snow tires break fresh patterns on the trail. Coming up over a ridge, you confront the coyotes. Mama looks you in the eye before trotting off. A pinyon jay screams and flies away. Perched on a fence post, a red-tailed hawk searches with sharp eyes. He is humped up against the cold, waiting for the sun to warm his flight. Frost fades and dark patches appear under the junipers. The day is changing color. The white rumps of pronghorned antelope shift against the pale yellow grass of a swale. The herd turns, then runs off on some unspoken cue. You stop to open a gate and wish you had a dollar for every time you've opened it. Small round bobcat tracks overlay rabbit prints along the fence. A few head of cattle are drifting into the tank, melting a path through the snow. As you get out of the truck, snowbirds rise from the fence line like a spray of buckshot, then settle back down to watch you work. The sound of the axe echoes back and forth through the draw. In a season of quiet, Christmas is a day quieter than the rest. The sun, round and bright, climbs steadily higher. You pause, look around, inhale deeply. By noon, you will be home. Company's coming to spend Christmas at the ranch. You can't tell them, but the real Christmas, for you, has already come and gone. Christmas on an Arizona ranch in 1987 may contain more material blessings than it once did, but the spirit is still the same. Ask Ione Babe Whipple of Sholo. She grew up on a Linden ranch. It was in the time of the Great Depression, but she never knew the difference. For ranch kids, hard times were a way of life. In the early 1930s, her widowed mother, also named Ione, was left with 9 children and a tiny monthly insurance check. Myrna, the oldest, was married. The other girls helped their mother with the housekeeping and took care of their baby brother, Joy. Lowell Rog Pierce, age 16, took over the ranch and cattle. Ione worked the farm, getting up before daylight in the spring to plow before she went off to teach school. In spite of endless work, Ione Pierce provided more than food and shelter for her children. She took the time to read to them, pray with them, and teach them how to work. Her own labor was occasionally lightened by transients who would stop at the ranch and work until they had money to go on. Mama was a cheerful person, said Babe. She was thankful she had a teaching degree when a lot of people didn't have a job. Even in those harsh days, Christmas was a time of wonderment for the Pierce children. In the close family circle, gifts were not very important. We drew names, said Babe. Most of the time we ordered from a catalog. We'd sit and study those wish books for days. Mama would usually help us pick out our gifts. We had a limit on what we could spend. The present I liked the best was a pair of white snow boots with fur trim. I prayed for snow so I could wear them. The big job on Christmas Eve was preparing chickens or turkeys for the holiday meal. Then Ion would heat water on the wood stove, and the children would bathe in a galvanized tub beside the warm stove to get ready for the big day. We always had a pinyon tree with candles. We made our own decorations with construction paper and popcorn. Christmas dinner consisted of roast fowl, homemade egg noodles, mashed potatoes and gravy, and home-canned vegetables. Mother made a delicious suet pudding she called Brown Dog with vinegar sauce. Fruit was a special treat, save for the Christmas stockings. Grandpa would come up from the Salt River Valley and bring grapes, oranges, and grapefruit. Mama would let us eat the grapes, but she'd ration the citrus fruit. In addition to fruit, there was homemade candy, fondant, fudge, and taffy. And there were balloons. Ion saw to it that each child had one. We played with them until they all burst. Then we would sit on the floor and play Rook or other card games. If there were visiting aunts and uncles, the Pierce children would go for a sleigh ride. We'd hitch up the work team and go off into the forest and see who could push each other off into the snow. Today, Babe and her sisters still get together during the holidays to recount old times. Sometimes we even play Rook again. Times were hard, too, for the Sid Earle family, living on an isolated ranch in the White Mountains. But Sid's wife, Viola, made the magic of Christmas seem real to their children. Sid was a cowboy and wild horse breaker. In 1921, he took a job as a stockman for the White Mountain Apaches and moved his wife and children from Vernon to Chino Springs on the Fort Apache Reservation. "We moved in a wagon with all our belongings," recalled Nola Power of Pine Top. "There were six of us kids, Nelma, Mervyn, Randall, Eulogene, Charles, and me. My dad had a good job for those days, but it was still hard to make ends meet." The Earls lived in a little white ranch house with a screen porch. The first year, Sid planted an orchard, and his wife put in a garden. The ranch kids had 2 years of blissful freedom before they moved into White River to go to school. "Mom was a Christmas person," said Nola. "We had a big tree with candles and popcorn strings. I still remember the thrill of it all. Mom would tell us about Santa Claus, and I didn't see any problem with his getting around to take toys to all the children in the world. The reservation was the whole world to me." That first Christmas morning in Chino Springs, Nola ran outdoors at daylight to see if Santa Claus had been there. To her delight, she found reindeer tracks in the fresh snow. Years later, she realized they were simply deer tracks. Nothing has ever been able to erase the magic of that Christmas for Nola. The Christmas that proved Santa Claus came to ranch kids, too. Another Arizona ranch family that rode out the Depression was the Reeds, who bought the Rocking Chair Ranch west of Snowflake in the 20s. Tom, his wife Olive, and four daughters lived in a three-room adobe house without indoor plumbing, running water, or electricity. Paper stuffed between ceiling beams served as insulation. For lack of brothers, the girls had to be cowboys as well as mother's helpers. Dorothy, Dodie, Tammy, Carol, and Peg learned to ride, brand, fix fences, and milk cows. "Our Christmases weren't much different from the other days," said Dodie. "I don't remember having a tree, but we had stockings filled with apples, oranges, and nuts. We usually got one Christmas present each." She was only 2 years old when she got the present she will always remember, a baby sister. On Christmas Eve, several families from the little settlement of Zenith came to the Reed Ranch to celebrate. They brought food and musical instruments and danced late into the evening. Peg was born after everyone went home, about 5 o'clock on Christmas morning. When the girls were old enough, they rode double on horseback to the one-room schoolhouse in Zenith. If the weather was stormy, they stayed all night in the settlement with friends. "The family had little money, but we weren't the only ones," she said. "We had plenty to eat, even a car, so we were lucky. Mom went to town once a month and had to make everything last in between." One Christmas, Peg and I got our presents, a doll and a toy dog, early because we needed them for a pageant at the school. We made costumes out of crepe paper. I had to hold the doll and recite a piece I learned. Peg held the toy dog and recited a poem, Little Boy Blue. When she got through, there wasn't a dry eye in the place. For Dodie, every day was a new learning experience. I just wished I'd asked more questions, she said. Those were tough old times, but I'm grateful for them. We learned how to work and how to utilize what we had. Tough old times, but in many ways, good old times. And actually not so different from life today on Arizona's remote ranches. Christmas still begins and ends with the chores, like every other day. The work reminds you that you are relied upon, that you are part of the season and part of the earth, part of the endless cycle of life, that you count. And, of course, that's the message of Christmas, too. This next story is from Arizona Highway's December 1995 issue, and the story is entitled Christmas Eve at Phantom Ranch by Tom Kuhn. On Christmas Eve Day, Julie Chabanou, age 25, rode into camp looking much the same, although the scar and slightly askew smile were new. Her arrival caused a sensation at Phantom Ranch on the floor of the Grand Canyon. It's like having someone come back from the dead, said Warren Tracy, the ranch manager, after he heard the former employee was returning. She almost didn't make it. Chabanou came down with head packer Russ Knox, age 39, whose mules deliver eggs without breaking them. They had descended South Kaibab Trail, the mules pussyfooting around the switchbacks above drops so vast you sometimes feel like you're floating free through the air. They had brought with them the last load of presents before Christmas from the snow-rimmed top. The ranch hands turned out to greet Chabanou. Only 3 months before, she had so many broken bones her x-ray pictures resembled broken pottery. Rock climbing alone in the canyon, without ropes, she had lost her purchase and fallen 150 feet. One of Knox's packers heard her cry for help, and a lot of people helped haul her out of the canyon. Nobody, including Knox, expected her back. He stood there now, wearing bearskin chaps against the chill morning, and spoke of her will to live. She's one of the toughest people I know, she said. All I remember is losing my handhold and falling. Remembering is unpleasant for Chabanou. A few months before her own accident, a co-worker had fallen to her death while climbing in the canyon. I hit on my right side. I broke my pelvis, tailbone, knee, hip, right wrist, most of my ribs, jaw, mandible, and both lungs were punctured. Doctors rebuilt her with titanium plate, pins, and trusses, and sent her home to Oklahoma City. She mended, but was not healed. She had returned to where she fell to face her fear. I didn't feel really recovered until I got down here, she said. It's a great Christmas gift. Chabanou's homecoming, back to the nurturing friends and her wilderness job, went almost unnoticed by the dudes and hikers who checked into Phantom Ranch for Christmas from Europe, Asia, Australia, Canada, and around the United States. Most were middle-aged. Some looked unfit for the arduous 9-mile-long climb out. I wondered what possessed him to come. Like Chabanou, I discovered some had personal curative agendas. Others were turning down the volume on commercial Christmas. A few were not Christians, there only by chance. Leslie Nyman, age 45, a health educator from Pelham, Massachusetts, saw it herself. She remembered a young woman full of curiosity, but that's not who looked back from the mirror recently. Christmas seemed a good time for personal resolutions. She and her husband, Mark Behrens, aged 49, a small animal veterinarian, were lucky to rent a cabin and hike down. Friends who talked of joining them all backed out. 25 years ago, life was a great adventure. Then you settle in your ways, Nyman added wistfully. She was certain Christmas in the canyon would be a good marker. For me, she said, this has become a way to experience adventure again. Peggy Miller, age 47, of Columbus, Ohio, a banking company vice president, expressed similar feelings. We talked under old cottonwood trees that clung to winter-cured leaves of frosted silver. Juniper wreaths tied with red ribbon bows were tacked to all the doors, but there was no decorated Christmas tree, few lights, and no Christmas music. Miller talked about job burnout, middle-age crisis, and the need to move the frontiers of her life outward. To underscore her resolve, she'd given her husband, Bill, age 53, a financial planner, an outdoor adventure book for Christmas with instructions to pick an adventure every year. I've always been Christmas-oriented, she said, but I've changed in the past couple of years. I'm not driven by having to do everything like I used to. The Grand Canyon was adventure number one. Peggy gave this trip to me as a Christmas present, said Bill, who had the front heavy look of a deskman. They had hiked in, and now it seemed every daylight moment his wife had him on the move, off hiking somewhere. When I'm here, I just can't get enough of it, she said. Serge Killingsworth, age 37, a high school mathematics teacher, and his wife Nancy, age 37, a nurse, of Mount Shasta, California, were determined to spend Christmas in a ranch cabin. On the first day reservations opened, she said, we called. It took 40 minutes on the phone to get them. I kept pressing redial. We decided on Christmas Day the prior year that we would return here. They cooked over a one-burner propane stove on a bench outside the dining hall with sons Owen, age 11, and Miles, age 8, and friends David Kowski, age 53, a medical social worker, and his wife Kathy, age 48. The Killingsworth had tasted adventure early and never gave up on it. In 1981, the two of them bicycled across America, on $10 a day, she added. There's more to Christmas than trees and presents, she said. We're spending ours with dear friends. Suddenly, she became aware her youngest son was listening and added, we called Santa on an 800 number and asked him to come to our house late. Phantom Ranch occupies a notched canyon of chocolate-colored basalt, ancient beyond comprehension. Bright Angel Creek races past, cold and clear, after gushing from a spring 8 miles up canyon. The ranch is the hub for three popular trails, North Kaibab, South Kaibab, and Bright Angel. Reserving one of the 92 rental beds at the ranch requires luck, especially over the holidays. Then you have to get there, and there are only two ways, ride a mule or walk, descending more than a mile of elevation in the process. The mules are used to it, but most people aren't. Everything must be carried in, even Christmas. There are no cars, almost no radio or TV reception, and just one public phone over which calls only go out. Mail goes by mule. The supper menu does not vary year-round. Steak or hiker's stew, but for Christmas the mules haul down frozen turkeys. A polyglot murmur, an English spoken in a variety of accents, rose above the clatter of busy flatware. Victoria, Australia policeman Steve Pope, age 26, on his honeymoon, was taking the Queen's English on a tour of the outback, and Korawit Wacharasindhu, age 34, of Bangkok, a squadron leader in the Thai Air Force, was exchanging bursts of Thai with two sisters and a friend. We decided why not, Wacharasindhu said, so they'd all come down on mules. My sister called to get reservations from Bangkok. Before lunch one day, they hiked 4 miles up the canyon and back in city clothes. Zheng Wei Chung, age 26, and Shin Che Trao, age 24, of Taipei, both attending Colorado universities, got the idea to come from a Chinese language newspaper. We wanted to see the canyon, Shin Che said. We just didn't want to take pictures from the rim and leave. Speaking with the unmistakable accent of their native England, Jean Pierce, age 58, and her husband Tom, age 61, a retired construction manager of Vancouver, British Columbia, said Christmas at Phantom Ranch was, for them, a major detour from tradition. Instead of being home for their three grandchildren and family gatherings, they had embarked in a recreation vehicle for the American Southwest. It's the first time I haven't cooked a Christmas dinner in 26 years, Jean said. A billion years of geologic distance separates the Grand Canyon floor from the outside, just right for German-born Dr. Gisela Strand-Hales, age 53. A language teacher at Hope College in Holland, Michigan, she was on her second Christmas visit to the ranch. She and her husband, Larry Hales, age 47, a General Motors Corporation executive who commutes to work in Shenyang, China, returned because, to me, it was the most wonderful thing I'd done, she said. It's like coming to the center of the earth, to the center of time. And here we are again to find our own center. My bed in the bunkhouse was adjacent to that of Wally Mays, a 49-year-old Santa Fe Railroad freight conductor from Mount Shasta, California. So I learned that he and his wife, Debbie, age 41, were commercial Christmas dropouts. They were with daughter Janae, age 16, and son Christopher, age 9, separating each night to the men's and women's dorms, but in the daytime hiking as a family and huddling around a backpacker's propane stove, cooking outdoors. "This starts a new thing for us," she said. "We're really trying to break tradition. But we put up a little tree before we left," she added sheepishly. "And we exchanged gifts before we left." They even left the gifts in the car on top to be open after they climbed out on Christmas Day. "We call them solstice gifts," she said. "People ask us why we want to spend Christmas with a bunch of strangers," said Cindy Radowski, age 31, of Scottsdale. "I tell them we all have something in common, hiking." She and husband Steve, age 34, an environmental engineer, were on a stress holiday. It was their 23rd hike into the canyon, their second Christmas at Phantom Ranch. "He has a lot of pressure at work," she explained. "When you hike, you have to concentrate on what you're doing. All those internal pressures get released." A 3-point mule deer buck browsed on juniper decorations that ring the dining room windows as we talked. "We have a tree at home and Christmas gifts," he said. "All the presents are wrapped and all the cookies are baked," she added. "When they return home 2 days after Christmas," he said, "we'll open presents, have a fire. That's part of the incentive." A Christmas cold front stained the day gray. Plump clouds sagged like wet batten below the canyon rim, sprinkling the bottom with rain. A damp chill settled over the ranch. College students Jack Gerbeck, age 22, of State College, Pennsylvania, and Aram Slovic, age 18, of Philadelphia, their backpacks leaking belongings, chose that moment to move their camp to Bright Angel Campground just below the ranch. Gerbeck was Christian, Slovic, Jewish. They had resolved any religious differences over Christmas and Hanukkah by observing winter solstice. With 3 days remaining on a 6-day camping permit, they were meeting adventure head-on. "It's outrageous. It's great," Slavik exclaimed. "I've never been anywhere like this. We heard a coyote the first night. That was a first." Gerbeck smiled weakly. "It's my first Christmas away from home," he said. "I miss them." And a little note from the author. A year in advance is not too soon to make reservations at Phantom Ranch for Christmas or New Year's. Telephone area code 520-638-2401 or write Grand Canyon National Park Lodges, P.O. Box 699, Grand Canyon, Arizona 86023. The next story is The Event of the Month by Gary Ladd. Lake Powell's Festival of Lights fills folks with the spirit of the season. Page, Arizona hosts the finest traffic jams in the state. They happen exactly twice a year along Lake Powell's Lakeshore Drive. Yet not a driver leans on the horn or clenches a fist. The first jam always occurs on a warm evening in early July, Independence Day fireworks. The second jam invariably occurs at nightfall on a nippy Saturday in early December. The holidays are coming, and it's time for the annual Festival of Lights Boat Parade, a procession of watercrafts of all description, bedecked in all manner of tinsel and light. I joined Festival of Lights coordinator Steve Ward on a houseboat to watch the annual event. Above us, all along Lakeshore Drive from Carl Hayden Visitor Center to Wawit Marina, motorists park and unload lawn chairs, blankets, gloves, and gallons of hot chocolate. Hundreds of cars carrying thousands of spectators gather to watch. It's sunset. Off in the distance, a great metropolis of rock and stone dominated by Tower Butte, Navajo Mountain, and the Kaperowitz Plateau turn crimson, fade to umber, and then melts into indigo dusk. A mile-wide circle of 30 patio boats, speedboats, and houseboats slowly rotates counterclockwise just this side of Castle Rock. On board, all hands run a final check of generators, electrical connections, lights, and trimmings. When the Canyon King, Lake Powell's stern wheeler, gives a signal, the circle ruptures and begins to snake down lake. The Canyon King is decorated to look like a locomotive. It's a bit of a stretch with its two towering stacks and all, but okay, it's a good faith effort. The Canyon King leads the way toward Glen Canyon Dam, pushing aside both water and the gathering darkness. I climb to the roof of the houseboat. There are no obstructions here to block the view. The Christmas train rumbles across our bow. Each boat is a car on the track, and each is a wonder. There is a floating manger scene, a Santa Claus with tripod and camera, a brilliant star in the east, and a frontier town complete with a last chance church. Reflections dance across the lakes, doubling the number of lights. But that's not half of it. Behind me, up along Lakeshore Drive, there's another gala in progress. Scores of car lights flicker up on the hill. Hundreds of people sit in their lawn chairs, and thousands more watch from their cozy vehicles. Flashlight beams play across the slick rock terraces, searching out the best vantage. The sound of jingle bells wanders across the lake from the direction of Antelope Island. Campfires blaze on the shoreline where boats snuggle up to the sandy beaches. Applause breaks out now and again from the darkened craft when each floating Christmas display drifts by. Noisy parties are in progress on some of the boats, and it's best that they're well off the right of way. There are nearly as many glittering lights behind us as there are aboard the train. The fact suggests a question. Doesn't anyone decorate their vehicle in fair and friendly exchange with the hardworking boaters? It seems like an opportunity lost. Steve tells me that awards are presented to the best daytime and nighttime entrants in each of several divisions. Originality counts, too. A few years back, one boat featured a maritime version of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles piloting an entrance entitled Christmas in the Sewers. All entrance fees are donated to the American Cancer Society. Eventually, 30 boats motor on by. Just so there's no mistake, the last one helpfully flashes the end. We're on our way back to the marina when I see it, a single enlightened RV parked far above us. Two giant electric candles stand on the roof, and a wreath hangs from the windshield. Now, those people have the holiday spirit, and I'm confident that they're anxiously anticipating the massive traffic snarl that follows. It's a holiday tradition eagerly awaited in Page. This is Sean Frothingham, volunteer reader for Sun Sounds of Arizona.